job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com.
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three, about 20 minutes into hour three, and Andy Serling joining us, and there are no videos more anticipated on the internet than Andy's Breeders' Cup videos. Good morning.
I'm going to guess there probably are, but thanks.
Yeah, there might be. I don't know. Rihanna's next release, I think, is probably the only one. What do you think, Andy? We got these fields lined up now, and we can tell you've been doing work because you've been sending out the polls, you've been asking interesting questions, getting people's response to, you know, who might get bet.
I'm trying to compete with the Breeders' Cup Twitter polls. It's a tough road to hoe.
you asked some interesting questions, including, you know, the fact Nick Tamaro touched on it about, you know, life is good and where, you know, he ends up in terms of the betting order in the Classic. Let's start with the Classic and give us some feel for how this is going to unfold. You've said right along that he's going to face Flightline, you know, real quality speed for the first time.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's too many bettors that try to beat horses of exceptional quality with horses that have a similar running style. I mean, it's kind of handicapping 101, right? If you want to try to beat a horse that's pretty tough to beat, theoretically, certainly seems like it, why would you take a horse that has the same running style and just doesn't do it as well? The other thing about Life is Good is, I think at some level you have to be concerned about his last race, wet track or not. Really wasn't a very good race. And you wonder, you know, I'm assuming they're going. And I like Life is Good. I've been a huge fan of this. But I think you have to look at these races objectively. And I don't know what scenario there is that he goes to the lead. He holds off. He battles at some point with Flightline. He puts him away and then he holds off Epicenter, Taba, and Olympiad. Doesn't seem like a scenario for a second choice to me, and it's not as though particularly Epicenter and Taba don't have the credentials from a speed figure standpoint. They have trainers. All of these horses have top trainers, including Olympiad with Mott. Every one of these horses has the credentials to take money and win the race, in theory, if you think that Flightline could be softened up. But I don't see the scenario that's likely to lead to victory for Life is Good. So from a betting perspective, the notion that I don't even think at this point it's absolutely clear he's the second best horse in the race. Epicenter's Travers was terrific. Taba's Pennsylvania Derby was terrific. And Taba's previous races are very good as well. And I think Taba has a chance to be an unusually good horse going forward. And I could say the same thing about Epicenter. I won't be surprised when he's unusually good. I mean, you want to compare him to Gunrunner, and I think you only do that because of the connections. Well, he's better than Gunrunner was at this point, right? Gunrunner didn't really come alive until the Clark.
Yep.
Until he started to be aggressive with him. At this point, he was just another horse running 101 buyers, basically, right? So, and just because Steve trained both of them doesn't mean they're the same horse. But I think you sometimes do look at the histories and you relate them to trainers, horses, etc. It's not just that I think life is good is in a tough spot from the perspective of the dynamics of the race. It's running against good horses. There are other good horses in this race. It was never a two-horse race. It might be a one-horse race. A lot of people seem to think it's a one-horse race. And I'm not preparing to stand on some sort of hill against Lightline. I never have. I don't see any reason I should. He's really good. I think that it's going to be a much different scenario in the Breeders' Cup Classic than, you know, people that saw the Classic and it was jaw-dropping think that's going to be a repeat of that type of performance, or they just don't know what they're talking about. And if they want to go to that sort of phony, sort of semi-phony Classic win by American Pharoah, well, who was the second best horse in that race? This is a race from the second, third, fourth, and fifth horses all have legitimate reasons to win.
Yeah, second best horse was what? FNX in the.
Yeah, but I don't even remember. I mean, they scratched. I mean, it seemed like, you know, Liam's Map didn't run. The Holder scratched, and it just sort of fell apart that race, right? And particularly the difference is there's a horse in Life is Good that's going to make Flightline have to run. I mean, Life is Good. Flightline may be no friend of Life is Good. So Life is Good is no friend of Flightline's either.
You know, you mentioned and you talk about Taba and Epicenter on the three-year-old front. And while I'm not going to claim that the Derby winner, the Rich Strike, is got the kind of dimension to him that the other two do, he certainly acquitted himself nicely against the horse of Hot Rod Charlie's quality in that Lucas Classic. And so the three-year-olds are well represented, and they've historically done well in the Classic.
Well, I mean, we all, you know, like that Rich Strike showed that his Derby was no fluke, and that he is a solid horse. He is not Epicenter, and he is not Taba.
No.
And Hot Rod Charlie, who you know I've been a big fan, has made it very clear he's not as good as the best horses either. Frankly, Hot Rod Charlie's a better horse when he can be forward. And good luck to him being forward in this race.
You know, it's funny bringing him up, too. This would be a fun race for head-to-head matchups, right? About who finishes ahead of who. You could have some fun on that front.
Well, you can always. All races have that perspective.
Yes.
Head-to-heads.
Yeah, I haven't heard that mentioned. The Breeders' Cup experimented with that a little bit. Andy, let's back up. In fact, let's stay with a couple of dirt races first, and then we'll swing around to a couple of turf opinions. Talk about the distaff and how you think that unfolds.
Well, I mean, Sai is going to lead. Search Results is sitting second. I mean, Nest is sitting third.
Okay.
You know, I don't have a problem with Nest. Whether or not she's actually the horse to beat in the race, I think is debatable, but she's very, very much in that conversation. The problem I have is that I'm guessing she'll be a shorter price than she should be. So I think in all likelihood, if Ness was the third choice in here, I might be inclined to pick her. But I think you have to make selections based on what you think their odds are going to be, and I just think that Search Results and Clairiere are probably the two that'll be the bigger prices. I mean, they are the more in line. It makes sense to be in the more, you know, it makes sense to be there. And a race like this, where I think all four of them can win, and, you know, maybe Nest is a little more likely, but I don't even know. You know, she's only got one race that's necessarily faster than these horses. And they're all really good. So I just think those are the kind of races where, from a betting standpoint, you're supposed to default if you're picking, or you have to bet one horse to a horse that's going to be a big price. Basic handicapping. I don't think it's. I mean, I think this race is exactly the race we've been talking about for what, 4 months. So
yep.
I don't think it's 3 months. I don't think it's. Hey, nothing's changed. The one thing I'll say about Nest, and it may just be that she's gotten so good that she's made every race she's in completely non-competitive. She seems to either win by a lot or not win. Though I guess that wasn't the case in the Demoiselle last year. Then again, I don't think that was the. You know, that was the Nest that we're dealing with this year, or anywhere, even a small facsimile of that horse.
What would be the percentage chance of Society wiring this group?
For me?
Yeah.
Extremely low.
All right.
I'm not taking a horse in the Breeders' Cup distaff against that group of horses that just won races at Parks and Charlestown, where a lot of things seem to happen that don't happen at other tracks.
I appreciate that perspective. Let's stay with the dirt, and the first leg of the late pick five is the sprint, which obviously took just a hit, essentially, with Jack Christopher basically being deferred out of it, which kind of robs us of what might have been that much more of an interesting addition.
Well, I think that's an issue that needs to be addressed in a responsible manner and not a lot of people saying irresponsible things and pointing fingers at different individuals because they don't particularly like them for whatever dopey reason. And that is a situation the Breeders' Cup needs to deal with going forward, because there has to be the opportunity for going overboard in some situations. But forgetting about that, and obviously it's become a pretty boring race without Jack Christopher, because I think the Jack Christopher Jackie's Warrior matchup was one of the ones that a lot of people were excited for this Breeders' Cup. I don't want to defer to Jackie's Warrior. He's a really good horse. He's also not as good as the sort of popular opinion, you know, the recency bias of forgetting about, you know, the many, many great sprinters over the years, many, many of whom would have beaten him routinely. That doesn't mean he's not a really good horse, and I'm not looking to knock him, but he's in a void where this year is a little bit better than last year in some respects in the sprint division, mostly because of his presence. But otherwise, it's been a pretty real dearth of good horses, and the horse who beat him last time is in the mile. This is particularly a year where the mile really just sort of really damaged it. And if the Breeders' Cup cared about more than just making money, they might actually reevaluate and ask themselves how much better the Breeders' Cup sprint would look with Cody's Wish in there, with Goodnight in there, or maybe you wouldn't run because the connections, and Laurel River in there, even Pipeline in there. And maybe because Flightline is so good, the Classic wouldn't be better with the presence of Cyberknife, even a simplification to a lesser extent, but Cyberknife. This is a race, the mile, that is damaged the Breeders' Cup from a competitive standpoint. It's added more money in their pockets, and I get it. They're trying to make money. But it's neither a championship race, nor is it a race that is helping the Breeders' Cup. It's just providing another race. And running it repeatedly at tracks that can't run one-turn miles even takes away, one of the reasons I think that the Met Mile and the Cigar Mile have become far more, the Met always was and the Cigar is, far more important races than this is they are one turn miles, so they really are that true matchup of sort of router types, a flat out that won the Cigar Mile, and sprinter types looking to stretch out, a Mattoli who won the Met Mile. You don't get that in these two turn races, and all they've done is create a race that has taken away from original Breeders' Cup races and frankly more important races.
Yeah.
And if the consensus is that they don't want a 6-furlong sprint, though I'm against that notion, then make it 7 like the fillies and get rid of the mile. It'll never happen because they make more money running the mile. But let's stop pretending that it's a championship race, and let's acknowledge the damage it's done, and particularly in this year. And if they're going to have situations which lead to horses not being able to run for certain reasons, then it's even damaged farther. I mean, Jackie's Warrior just sort of lays over them. I'm not an elite power fan. I guess he's improving. I just haven't seen him run a race I think is fast enough. I guess American Theorem's not impossible.
Yep.
He seems like he's probably better horse. The race American Mari's had a neat season. I would think that Wesley made a mistake not running in the 7-furlong race, but I guess with Jack Christopher coming out, she does become the second choice. I'm a little bit skeptical of the big figure she's gotten in her races because it's a little tough to make Lady Rockette get that, or even Frank's Rockette, though she duplicated the number at Charlestown. I guess she's the second likeliest winner, but she's not really my cup of tea, but not impossible. So actually, this is a race where I'm on it trying to make picks, and I'm a little bit perplexed. I mean, I'll probably end up defaulting to Jackie's Warrior, but I'm not sure that he's a 2-5 shot you're supposed to default to, even though he's very much the likeliest winner.
Well stated, Andy, all around. Let me get a mile and turf opinion to fill in with those three dirt races, the late pick
five. I'm not going to give you strong opinions because I'm doing my videos.
No, I understand.
I don't know what I really like in this race.
The turf
mile, I'm not even close to having picks in that race.
All right, that's fair.
I've done the work, but it's hard, I think the draw obviously didn't. I don't think the draw of domestic spending is that big a deal.
No.
Because he has no speed, and the horses inside of him have speed, so he'll be fine. I think it's much worse for a horse like Kinross, who wants to be forward. Thank God Godolphin drew well with Modern Games. You'd hate to see them ever get a horse that hurt their I also don't think – I think he's a good horse. I think Regal Glory is a major player in this.
I agree.
Kinross, I mean, it is going to keep doing, you know, 6 furlongs, 7 furlongs, runs every couple of weeks. Stays away catching up. I think Dreamloper is far from impossible in here. She ran well last time. There was an incident in the race where the favorite, they broke down in the stretch, so that probably dressed her race up a little bit. But there's a number of contenders, even Ivar's horse that seems to always get a piece. As far as the Breeders' Cup turf, I mean, the Breeders' Cup turf is the perfect ending to this year of extremely mediocre turf routing, because it's just the Hazarai of horses that are nice horses, but they're not really grade one type routers, except for Warlike Goddess. And I think she should be favored. I can't understand how she is not favored in here. I don't understand how anybody looks at her and doesn't think she's the likeliest winner off her last race. She was against a strong rail bias. She was never inside, and she just swamped that field. Was it a really good field? No. But she ran better than any of the U.S. horses here. It's not even close. And, you know, let's look at the Euros, okay? Broome ran well in the race last year. I will give him that. He was a better horse last year, right? He had won the Grand Prix. His recent form is just abysmal. It's not bad. It's awful. I mean, okay, fine, but he's not a horse I would bet. Mishra, it's really great that Mishra's coming over here. First of all, he's probably better a little bit shorter. And second of all, his recent form, abysmal. Let's see. Stone Age, I mean, I don't know. He's been going to lead and not getting a piece. He's run okay, but he ran in our races for three-year-olds and was ineffective. Rebel's Romance, they like him so much, they're running him over in Germany. He's like the morning line favorite or second choice. Nation's Pride, what is so special about him? Is he impossible to win? No, is Rebel Romance? None of these horses are impossible to win. But I don't see what about these horses makes them as good as the Phillies last race in particular, or the Philly, the race mare. I just think Warlike Goddess is a stick out from what I've seen in these horses, because unless something random happens with a Euro, which might happen, they're just in bad form, and she's in great form. She ran her best race last time by a mile, and Bill Mott's probably been right all along. She just wants more distance. Why is she not favored in this race?
Well, that's a question we could ask Nick. We could ask Nick Tamara.
Well, no, I mean Nick's not making the odds based on who he's going to win. He's making it only thinks he's going to bet. He's probably right.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why people wouldn't make her the favorite. That's all. I'm not insinuating Nick is wrong by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I get it.
But all I hear is people telling me how great Nation's Pride is. Some nitwit on Twitter last night told me that he crushed the Pebbles track record. Like that wasn't the dumbest thing I've heard all year.
That's a big field, Ant.
No, that would really stand
that
out.
That was special?
No, that was a real special.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine suggesting that he's like 2.5, 2 seconds faster than Pebbles?
I actually, it's funny because this morning I went to this race and I myself came up to that same kind of like what Nation's Pride, what are we so excited about?
Everybody's gonna say, well, Yabir won last year, and listen, maybe Charlie Appleby will continue to win 50% of his Breeders' Cup races going forward, but I'm kind of sitting around waiting for the reversion of the mean, and you know what, he probably is too.
I think that anybody that really cleans the glasses and looks closely, I mean, Warlike Goddess, it makes just an absolute ton of sense. I completely agree.
To be honest, when I was doing the pre-work, I thought she'd be 8-5.
Interesting.
And I thought, what am I going to do to pick against her at 8-5? Clearly, I had a bad opinion.
Andy, let me get, I know you got to go. We got a minute. I want to ask you about one race on Friday. The Juvenile Fillies feels like a place with a 14-horse field that we could have some fun.
Yeah, I think the draw kind of hurts some major contenders, but it's wide open. I got to go, Steve.
All right. Andy, certainly everybody knew we had to go. We had to get right out at 11:40, but we got the late pick 5 covered and then some.
Yes, we did. I just wanted to bring up one point that Andy did about the mile, the dirt mile. That's been the most talked about.
I'm glad we went in this direction because you also. You actually already gave Friday. You gave everybody the committee. Some people were asking me about the committee decisions, but you covered that on Friday. So go ahead. Go back to you lived through the era when this decision was made.
With the dirt mile.
Yeah.
Adding the race. It's, it's been one of the most, it's been the most talked about race.
Pretty much.
It's had some great runnings, some, entertaining runnings. Yeah. I'm going to say as far as payouts, remember that horse of Holland Orphers won and paid $80 and this horse and that horse. But Andy's right. The dilemma is that this race here could take away from the classic and it could take away from the sprint. And not necessarily could, it does. So if that race wasn't there this year, who would have gone where? Okay, that's the question you want to look at. And I was on the fence about which way to go. And there's another thing to look at, and just to play devil's advocate with this, what about the owners of these horses that are running in the mile that aren't three quarters horses? I mean, I thought this year's bunch was suited for the mile. As you go down the list here. Where are you going to go? Slow down, Andy. He's not running a mile and a quarter against Flightline.
No,
and he's not a sprinter. So the mile hits him. It's him exactly right. Simplification. We talked about him. It was a nice 3-year-old early in the year. Was a favorite in the Florida Derby. He's run some nice races. He's tried Taba before. He got beat to Rich Strike, and he's not going to go pounding on that door again. And he hasn't sprinted since his first couple starts. So there's another horse that he's going to be 40-1 in the classic or 25-1 in the sprint. Pipeline, he could sprint, but look at his 9 starts. He's never run 3/4, so he's begged to go long. He's tried a mile and an eighth once. The mile hits him just right, if you ask me. Law Professor. He tried a mile and eighth last time in the Woodward. He ran a good race to Life is Good. Life is Good put him away finally at the end. And he hasn't sprinted since February at Santa Anita. And that was in his maiden race, and that was 6.5. So this horse fits the mile. Gunite, he could go 3/4, obviously. He's fast. He's quick. It turns out there's another fast one in there from the same stable, so they probably opted for this. So, take the owners into consideration where they have a nice horse. They're not really a top horse. This isn't a classic type race for the Breeders' Cup, but it's a place for these horses to land, and it gives them a chance to run for some decent money and run in the Breeders' Cup. And hey, we need all the owners we can get. We don't need another big priced horses in some of these races. Some prior years, yes, there's been some horses that definitely should have been in one or the other races, but I don't think in this year's case. You can really say that this horse should have been in this race and this horse should have been in this race. Cyberknife, he's a double grade one winner against 3-year-olds. But his last couple races, he got beat by Epicenter pretty good and he got beat by Taba. So now you're going to ask him to go a mile and a quarter against these same two horses where he doesn't belong. So the mile fits him perfectly. So we get a nice contested race on Breeders' Cup Day and some owners get a chance to run their horses at 6, 7, 8-1 instead of 20, 25-1. So that's the other side of the coin, if you want to look at it. And, Lord knows we need as many owners as we can get in this game. And I think that's the other side of the coin.
And it's very fair and understood. This all goes back to 2007, where the launch of the Filly and Mare Sprint, and that was the first, basically the first incursion against the sprint, when the fillies and mares were given the option to go 7/8. And, we say it every year. I mean, the history of the sprint is dotted with, some really wonderful and important moments when it came to, fillies contending and winning. And so that, that sort of changed the demographic or the composition, and then came this dirt mile to further dilute the sprint potential. And so what feels like a negative here, Rick, is just that the division that's 6 furlongs on dirt is an American, you know, speed evaluator, and it should always, you know, have a full or foolish field, considering how many races are run at the distance. I mean, we've become way more classic and you know, route interested. I mean, all you have to do is look at the sale results and see everybody looking to buy stallions and to win classic races. I mean, that's the focus. But Andy's point is absolutely well made about the Breeders' Cup, you know, wanting to have ammunition for 2 full days of racing.
Oh, 100%. I'm not saying
that's, you know, that's the impetus.
And I've basically spoken up on that side majority of the time, but I'm playing the other side. And, you know, the mention of making the dirt one 7/8, no. Like you said, 6 furlongs,
yeah,
that's a sprint.
Yeah.
And we have a filly in here this year.
Kamari.
And so the offer's still there. If you have a nice sprinter that goes 3/4 that's a filly, you can, you know, go ahead and go for it. The 7/8, you know, it's a filly mare sprint. This is the sprint championship right here, going 3/4.
No, I
don't think we're going to go any longer on that. But I just wanted to give the other side sometimes, you know, it is not heard of, and
we want to be even-handed.
And you know, I spend a lot of time listening to owners that sit and sit in the chair, and they're like, "Hey, I got a nice horse. You know, I want to run. I want to do not necessarily Breeders' Cup, but I can you write a race for me that fits my horse, or yeah, that you know, a bunch of guys can run in?" And I say, "Yeah, I get it." So
no doubt,
they pay the bills, and you know, it's good for the breeders too. It is the Breeders' Cup, so I'm you know, if Dora's listening, she's going to go, "Yeah, thank you, Rick," because I said usually I'm on the other side, but you know, it's an argument that's well cited.
Papo Morales joining us from AmWager and Form to Win, and we're certainly going to look forward to the way the Form to Win snapshots offer up these 14 races and the rest of the card. Papo, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Oh, hold on. Let's try that again. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
That's my fault. I didn't have the mic on. Papo, quick recap from the weekend, and one thing that I forgot to do last night, even, and I'm realizing it now. I didn't go look at the snapshot from the Melbourne Cup. Did the Melbourne Cup was a bonanza in terms of mutuals? Did you get a chance to look at how it shook out on the grid?
No, unfortunately, no, Steve. I played around with it a little bit yesterday. I was waiting to look at ground conditions so I could factor that in, but I never got back to it last night. So I'll probably go back at some point today once I get the information and relook at it. But pretty much all eyes on Breeders' Cup for me right now.
There you go. Well, I should look at our man Cheggers on Twitter. He's big on the Australasia. We get the occasional Mooney Valley, and he's watching Australia Sea using Form to Win, which all you have to do is go to the other hemisphere setting, and you can, I mean, if you're a night owl, you can play literally 24/7. Papo, let's do a couple of things. First of all, the AmWager and the weekend ahead offers and anything that people want to know about for the platform this weekend.
Yeah, well, my selections will be available through AmWager only. Just look for the French Bulldog. If you see him on a horse, that's the horse that I like. Not going to dive too much into Friday. I tend to like to watch how the track plays Friday, and I don't really have any strong opinions on those juvenile races. So, yeah, other than that, and then, you know, Form to Win, you can use Inside AmWager. I'll be using, posting those screenshots later this week. Right now, I'm just going through and figuring out what races I want to take out so I can recalculate some of the, projected times on horses. But, I've pretty much done the late pick five, with the exception of the classic on Saturday, and then I looked at that dirt mile, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but a couple of horses that I like are double digits, so we'll see how those come through.
Well, let me ask you this. We talked certainly in the spring and even in the last couple of weeks about Keeneland. When it comes to the short stretch, and you mentioned the dirt mile, and we mentioned earlier how the two juvenile races utilize the first wire. Any setting suggestions or nuance that you know we take into Breeders' Cup weekend from the fall and the spring?
No, but the dirt mile going two turns is going to be interesting on form to win. I typically run mile races. I only look at performances a mile and a mile and a 16th, and I may do that this time, but unfortunately that's going to leave out horses that have only been one turn and 7 furlongs. So I'm looking for horses on the cutback. And speaking of that dirt mile, I've heard you mention them a couple times. I really like Simplification. I think his form's a little bit muddied up. He did nothing wrong in the Derby. I tossed his Preakness. Not sure what was wrong there. He had a long layup after that. Looks like he's been working back. I tossed his Bull Ring performance out at Charlestown. His race last time out wasn't terrible.
No, he ran well. He ran fine.
If he used Brisnet, he actually got the best number of his career. So working back into shape there. So I kind of like him as a price play. I'm interested in Cyberknife just from class. I mean, look at his past performance he's been running against, Epicenter, Taba. I like the cutback for him. And I wasn't sure what to do with Laurel River for Baffert, running against small fields out west, but he has been two turns. You know, the mile configuration at Del Mar is two turns. So interested in those three horses. And then the sprint, nothing creative there. American Theorem is the only other horse, maybe a straight exacto with Jackie's Warrior. The Mile is an extremely interesting race, Steve, and I'm very interested in the one horse Pogo coming in for Charlie Hills. I went back and watched his races. Now, if you go back to his past performances and look, he's beat Ken Ross before May of this year. He lost to Ken Ross by a head on July 26th. He lost by him again on August 20th by a length and a half, but he wheeled back 7 days into that race, Steve. So then he came back at Newmark at 7 furlongs. That was a straightaway. He won impressive. I liked his bowed neck after the race also. Hmm. So you have a horse that was in the mix with Ken Ross, and he's 5 times the price. So interested in Pogo. He has also good gate speed for Euro.
Yep.
So I don't expect him to be up there with the leader. I mean, that horse shipping him from California is going to go 23.46 easily. That Beyond Brilliant. I expect Smooth Like Straight to be sitting just off him. Probably Smooth Like Straight is always runs well, but is never in first crossing the finish line. So I'm interested in Pogo. Maybe Ken Ross defensively. Obviously Modern Games and Dream Loper is a little bit interesting either. Of the Chads, I actually prefer Regal Glory. I know Chad was not happy about post 14. Not that it's a killer, but he was not happy about that. And you're asking a lot of the horse coming off a extended layoff year plus, and at a distance, it probably isn't his maximum. So, and he'll probably be a shorter price than Regal Glory.
I don't know about that. I don't know. I think her current form is you know. Fairly overwhelming, and I think that 14 hole will scare some people away. I think you'll get the price that you want on domestic.
Okay, yeah, he's gonna have to overcome a lot. I mean, I don't see him winning. Maybe he can finish underneath.
No, I like mile. the mile. It's funny. For years, the mile was one of my favorite, if not my favorite race. Of the weekend, and then kind of, you know, then there was kind of a not a dull period. I mean, certainly when Goldikova went on her tear, it was as amazing as anything to me in Breeders' Cup history, frankly. And Teppan as wonderful as she was, but this feels like a particularly fun, especially thinking back, 2 years to the Aidan O'Brien trifecta, which was pretty wild. All right, I'm taking away from you. What else are we looking
Distaff,
at?
Steve, is, yep. I think that's a great, just an outstanding race. I mean, you can go any number of ways. So the horse I'm going to key off is Blue Stripe, who I know sounds like Mike Welsh is interested in. We talked about her, Steve, last time out when she won the Clement Hirsch back in August. She got a 5.75 on the rags, which fits. She runs well fresh. Don't forget her; she's a sister to Blue Prize,
yep,
who won the distaff here. So I'm very interested in Blue Stripe and working her in with some of the favorites. I probably prefer Malathat a little bit over Nest. It'll be extremely interesting how people bet this race. I'm not sure who, Ness is the morning line favorite. I'm not sure if that's going to hold up, but an extremely competitive race, and in a race like that, I want a little bit of a price, so I'm interested in Blue Stripe.
Good for you. Mike reiterated yesterday when I asked him for his best offbeat horse. He's hanging tough with Blue Stripe, so I'm not going to argue.
Yeah, and in the turf, I wasn't expecting to like Warlike Goddess as much as I do now.
Yeah.
When I went through the field, these aren't world beaters that are shipping over.
No.
The only horse I would be interested in, although his form hasn't been great this year, but I do think he's going to like the firm ground, is Mishrith. You know, John Gosden doesn't chip over here to run third or fourth. So I'd be interested maybe in Mishrith and Warlike Goddess. I don't know what to do with the Rebel's Romance and Appleby's other one. But yeah, third choice. If Warlike Alice is the third choice, then that's the play.
And it sounds like for the late pick four, pick five, are you flight line exclusive?
Oh, I got to do a little more work. I've got to go back really, Steve, and drill down on Life is Good just from a rag standpoint. He's run some big numbers. I got to see how far ahead he's going to be from flight line. I do know this, that when Baffert was asked about Life is Good about a month ago, he said this was a derby horse, you know, before he got injured and then moved to a different barn. He seemed like not worried by any means because he's got Table, but he had a lot of respect for Life is Good. So we'll see. I got to really drill it down. You got to figure out a way that he's able to win. So I got to see if he's going to be able to get up by open links. I don't think he liked his track last time out. His only mile and a quarter races out in the Middle East, which, you know, do what you want with those races. But I know he likes fast, and that Keeneland track is going to be, who knows how it's going to play. I have a feeling it's going to be playing extremely speed friendly, and he gets out there and starts wheeling it. Goes 23, 46, 109. We'll see. It'll be a very interesting race. The only knock on flight line, if there is a knock, is turning for home. He's never looked another horse in the eye.
That's true.
You never know how a horse is going to react when they do that. He's pure talent. I mean, hey, his talent may overcome that. He may go away by five or six, but it's a question you have to ask yourself. So a couple of days to figure it out, and it'll be an exciting matchup.
And we'll be able to look at the Friday races on Wednesday and the Saturday races on Thursday on Form to Win.
Yes.
Excellent. We'll start to set out the snapshots, and we'll revisit at the end of the week. Papo Morales, everybody, Form to Win. For those of you that have already joined MWager, take advantage of the introductory offer and the Form to Win right built in to the platform. Papo, I appreciate it. We'll talk again at the end of the week.
Yeah, sounds great, Steve.
Papo Morales, everybody, Form to Win, and MWager. Hammer, this was I think it was 180 minutes, but it was a fast 3 hours.
Yes, it was, especially with jet lag. We'll be a little more tied on tomorrow.
Excellent. Rick Hammerly, everybody. John Toscano visited. We have to get a congratulations into John and, of course, Nick Tamaro with a full and complete pace scenario. Andy Serling with the late pick five opinions, and Papo to get us ready for the Form to Win snapshots later in the week. There we go. Day two from Keeneland, and looking forward to getting the full Thoroughgraph action in. Get that slapped on to the PPs and drilling down. And we'll start tomorrow with both Dick Powell and with Seth Merrow, as well as Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Thanks, everybody. Good luck today if you're playing anywhere. And we'll talk to you in the morning, 9 o'clock, at the races.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a